super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man with the power, the man of the hour, the one for whom you beg, the one who's the bacon in your eggs, and the one who's the face between your legs, ladies and gentlemen, 42nd Street Pete.
Thank you. My face looks like a glazed donut. My ass feels like it's been reamed. Actually, I had a colonoscopy last week. It was a very eye-opening experience in more ways than one because the doctor found something that was wrong, but hasn't told me how to deal with it yet. My phone calls have gone unanswered. So much for this wonderful overhaul of our health care industry. So I got a problem and don't know how to even take care of it because nobody's called me back since last Friday. You believe this shit? It's got to be this three-card Monty medical insurance I took out. You know, it's like $600 a month I could be spending on drugs. That's what it comes down to. It really does, but hey, it's all in the news. We all hear this crap, and, you know, I'm so sick of the rhetoric because nothing's going to ever change and shit like that, so why bother? And, you know, we're talking about grindhouses, so, you know, fuck my health. What the hell? I'll get better. I'm not going to die. I'll be here. I mean, I beat prostate cancer. I'll beat this shit, too. And speaking of beating stuff, how about our winner from last week with the DVD, The Forest? It was Joe Nardi from New York. He won a copy of The Forest. He got the name of the killer right. And the killer, for those who don't know, was none other than Gary Kent, who does a little bit of acting and a lot of stunt work. Gary was instrumental in a lot of the Al Adamson films. He always, you know, played with the bikers and stuff like that. He's been on a ton of stuff, worked with a ton of great actors, great stars, and actually I think Gary is writing a book. I don't know when it's due out, but I know he's writing his memoirs, and I think he's probably going to debut the book when it's done at Cinema Wasteland. Where else would you want to debut something like that? But Joe had asked me about Kung Fu films, and I know a little bit about Kung Fu films. Actually, there was one theater on the Deuce, again, going back to our wonderful Blackjack books. It was right near there. I honestly don't remember the name of the place. All I knew is this thing ran three different Kung Fu movies every week. And it seems that, like, I guess the time period for when all this stuff cracked, because I was doing some little research on the stuff, is actually the first Kung Fu movie I had to see was something called Five Fingers of Death, I think, with Lo Lee. And this was the must-see Kung Fu movie, except for when we did want to see it, we had been out all night, we were drinking, and we were fresh out of money. So we knew one of the ushers that was working. It might have been that theater, I'm not exactly sure, because like I said, we were all drinking. And pretty much we bribed him a little bit to, like, leave the door open, the exit door open, which he did. But we came in right in front of the screen. It was five of us, like deer caught in the headlight, and was like, drop into the first seat you can find and don't move and just hope nobody saw you. And we didn't get caught. And it was a pretty interesting thing because I had never seen a Kung Fu movie before. You know, it was all, you know, the training and stuff like that. And it culminated with, you know, that heart punch, I call it, where they just punch through the guy's chest and rip his heart out or something like that. That was always a showstopper. And that was all, you know, that was 72, and that was when the Bruce Lee films came out over here, too. Fist of Fury and Chinese Connection, I believe they were both released that year. And I was actually managing the Livingston Drive-In during that time period, and of course the drive-ins were, you know, perfect places for these things. We got something called Deep Thrust. And one of my jobs at the drive-in that I never did because I got a fear of heights was I never changed the marquee. So when they had put Deep Thrust in, I don't remember what the co-feature was, somebody in the middle of the night went up there and changed it to Deep Throat, and they thought it was me. And I took a lot of shit for that. And I told them, I said, look, part of my job is to change the marquee, and I told you guys I wasn't going to do that anyway, and you had a handyman do it. So how do you think I climbed up there in the middle of the night being scared shitless of heights and did all this stuff? But, hey, it went with the territory. But, you know, these things played all over the inner cities. They were intensely popular, and You know, like I said, 72, you had, you know, Five Fingers of Death, Fists of Fury, Chinese Connection, Deep Thrust. Another one that was a perennial favorite of mine was Queen Boxer. And that was the one where, you know, the chick ripped the guy's eyeballs out and held them in her hand. It was even on the poster, she's standing there with a handful of eyeballs and stuff like that. And, you know, progressively, these things got a little bit bloodier. I mean, you had that one called the Flying Guillotine where they threw that cage over a guy's head, then yanked it and took his head right off. And there was some other stuff there. But then, you know, you got too much into that costume stuff, and it was sort of, it didn't really do anything for me. But the funny part was that place on 42nd Street would book anything Chinese, and I guess they weren't paying attention, because in 75 they had booked Killer Snakes on a triple bill, and I'm like looking at this and I'm going, that don't look like a kung fu movie, and I, you know, I'm into reptiles, so I wanted to check it out. And yeah, it didn't go over too well with the inner city crowd, because all the brothers are there like wondering, they probably thought the Killer Snakes was some kind of new move or something like that. And basically the film was about this this guy who basically couldn't get laid. I think that was the premise of the film. They just released it. I think Images put it out through Trouble. It's finally intact. And it actually got rated X because there was explicit sex in it, and they were using real snakes. And the whole thing was, this guy had found a cobra with its bladder, I guess its gallbladder, cut out, because, you know, the Chinese think that gallbladders make you more sexually potent or something like that. So he rescued all these snakes that had their gallbladders cut out and sewed them up and brought them back to health and stuff. And it was sort of like a Chinese Willard, where it was like, sick them. And the one hooker that was tormenting him the most, he tied her spread eagle and put her in a position where some snakes should never go, and that was the end of her. But yeah, this one really blew a lot of people's mind. And another one that came in there was something called Black Magic. And, you know, another you know, Asian horror flick that I guess somebody must have thought it had karate overtones, which it didn't, and that just got released too. And it's more of a sorcery thing with a wizard and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Part 2 just came out,
but,
too.
Oh, Part 2 did come out?
Yeah, they just put it out about a month ago.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that. I got to pick that up. That was even more nuts than Part 1. That was you know, and that was a repeater, too, because that kept coming back, because it drew the horror crowd. You know, it was along with the karate crowd, but it drew the horror crowd. People love that film. You know, the zombies with the spikes sticking out of their head and crocodiles and all kinds of shit going on. So, yeah, that sort of threw a wild card into the mix there. You're expecting something and you get something totally different. It blew a lot of minds. A lot of people left pissed off and shit, especially with the snake movie, because a lot of people just don't like snakes. I mean, I like to look at them as long as it's behind glass and can't get to me and stuff. I'll look at them, but, you know, a lot of people just don't like snakes in general. So there's my kung fu remembrance for this week.
I have to interject.
Like I said, you know, anybody who wants to write in, you know, certain genres or films to talk about, I'm all ears. I'm willing, you know, to talk about any film here.
There's one we forgot to mention, and this was one of my favorite kung fu movies, Pete. But the thing was, it was made by Italians. It was Bruce Lee Fights Back from the Grave. Remember that one?
Oh yeah, that thing where he popped out of the grave. Yeah, that was insane. But usually, you know, I honestly don't remember that much of that one, probably because I was pretty loaded when I saw it. But
they had some. I don't
they
even
had a
know.
Lookalike.
Yeah, and it didn't even match at all. It didn't even make a bit of sense. Someone had just shot, like, Aquarius Releasing, or someone put it out, and someone had just shot this crazy opening like they did with Dr. Butcher that didn't even have anything to do with the movie, and they just tossed it on there with this guy jumping out of a grave that looked kind of like Bruce Lee. And then the other movie kicked in, and it was an Italian-made movie with an Asian cast, and it's dubbed, so it looked like it was one of the Asian kung fu movies. But then I found out later, well, no, that was Joe D'Amato had something to do with that, and all kinds of people.
That would make sense. You know, they're the Italians are, you know, I love them to death, and they have a great film. They had a great film industry. I don't know what's going on now. You don't see too much coming out of there. But they were quick to hop on anything that was going on around here, like, the, you know, the Rambo stuff and things like that. I mean, God, you know, when Rambo was out, it was probably, you know, a month later, it was four Italian-backed, you know, copycat of him out. So nothing would surprise me, you know. And, you know, when you saw it, was a lot of Direct that came out, too. But, you know, it mixed in with the Direct, there was some real gems.
I love them all, man. Direct, gems, I don't care, hell. I love those Italian knockoffs.
Oh, yeah, they were great. Some great stuff out there. And, you know, we pay homage to all that stuff here and in print and stuff like that. I mean, oh, you got to pick up the new Scars. Anybody, I tapped myself into this. I'm actually proud of myself because they had asked me if I could write a blaxploitation article. And people go, well, you know, something, you just pull stuff off the internet. I'm like, fuck that. Anybody can do that. Let me do some research. So I took a couple days and I dug, and not through the internet, through books and magazines, and I came up with something. And I'm actually, you know, I don't really put over a lot of stuff I do, but I'm proud of this one. This one came out good. So it's the new issue of Scars. It's the one with Dead Snow on the cover, the dead Nazis and stuff like that. And it's a pretty good read, if I do say so myself, and there's a lot of other good, interesting stuff in there. So definitely pick up the, you know, the latest issue of Scars and go on the website if you want to read some of my reviews and stuff like that. You know, the Grindhouse double features, and I just reviewed a bunch of stuff. So it's all good, you know, and like I said, I'm proud of the way that came out. It came out good, and the graphics they used are tremendous. So it's definitely worth picking up a copy. You're probably going to have to order it directly from them because they're not in Barnes & Noble, and, you know, that I think I went through that whole thing last week, so we're going to have to rehash that. And on a, you know, I got to do a shout-out to somebody. I don't know if anybody remembers Blackjack Mulligan. He was a wrestler, started in the late 60s, went almost up into the 90s. His son, Barry Windham, was another wrestler. Well, Blackjack had a stroke, 66 years old. I want to send that. I hope he's doing well. He was one of the first guys I met. Now, here was a guy who could wrestle an hour and a half match and hold your attention. And nobody can do that today, as far as I know. He wrestled guys like Ric Flair. There was a legendary story. He wrestled the Masked Superstar in a cage for an hour and a half. And, you know, I hate to see anybody get sick because I've been there myself, and I wish Blackjack the best, and I hope he makes a full recovery. So that's my shout-out for this week. So are we getting toward that time? I hear that sound in the background. I do hear that sound. I do think it's time for this week's shit list. And, you know, being in this business, and Todd, you know this too, you got to have thick skin. And I think I have pretty thick skin, but then again, every once in a while, somebody will do something to me or to somebody else that'll really piss me off. And this time, it was sort of done to me, but it was done to a couple other people too. And the guy who's going to win the shit list this week, he's a reviewer on Amazon, and I think he calls himself the Bay Area Savage. Well, you know and I know that I've been reviewing stuff since, like, 95. And, you know, I used to fuck around with stuff and bust balls, but these were older films. These weren't up-and-coming people. You know, a lot of the people who had done some of these older films are no longer with us, and so that was, like, you know, a segue to break balls. But I sort of toned it down when people, other filmmakers, started sending me stuff to look at and critique and stuff like that, and rather than go off because some of the stuff was really bad and things like that, I don't want to give anybody a bad review. I would just opt not to review it. And I've never, ever told anybody not to buy something based on my review because opinions are reviews. Reviews are opinions. Opinions are like assholes. We all have them. But it seems this Bay Area Savage guy decided to get really deep into my shit. And the review was on Amazon, and I countered the review with a rebuttal, and the review got pulled off. But I did dig some of it. Now, this is for The Night of Perverted Pleasures, something, you know, we did in New York, and the review was called Never Judge a Book by Its Cover. And the guy says he returned this compilation because all three movies have newly produced annoying instrumental music in the background during the sex scenes. Well, if anybody knows anything, and you're supposed to be, obviously you're some kind of critic, review artist or something, do you honestly think that Universal would license me or anyone else the music for Psycho, Jaws, Halloween, for a porn film? Well, that's what they used back in the day, and they could get away with it. But obviously, we're not going to be able to get away with it. So, we had to alter the thing, otherwise it wouldn't have come out. Now, he's saying these are short, quirky films that were produced for a fast buck. This is a two-disc set, and the second disc contains lame trailers for straight-to-DVD films. For it to be, you know, okay, this guy's a creator, now he's telling me how to make the discs. The play-all feature is school. However, I didn't like the intermission intros by 42nd Street Pete himself. This was totally used for time filler, and seeing a male host talk to me between racy sexploitation films is a major turnoff. He called me a creepy old man, and a bunch of other stuff. Now, he pulled this off because I rebutted. Then he said, do not buy anything with the 42nd Street Pete name on it. Now it gets better. I wouldn't recommend this DVD for all the right reasons. This is one of those underground distributors trying to capitalize on anybody desperate enough to purchase lost sleazy films from the glory days on an officially pressed DVD and don't realize what they're buying. Have some respectable presentation. This one contains all three films and even takes a long time to load in your player. And the DVD box is really cheap and flimsy. I felt like I bought a bootleg material. Products like this give other independent companies that put out quality exploitation DVDs a bad name. You take the good with the bad, but at least I know which path not to take with certain folks in the business. Well, fine. After Hours Cinema, all this stuff is owned by one major company. They're all different labels. This is not a bootleg operation, and I resent that implication, too. But like I said, somebody cleaned this thing up, and I really couldn't print out the one where he really went off on me about how not to buy anything with my name on it. He also goes on to trash the 42nd Street Forever Volume 4, that all the trailers are uninteresting or boring. Now, we go up to, and this guy seems to have a real hard-on for pop cinema in general. It's called Confessions of a Young American Housewife, and the header is Retro Seduction Cinema Should Go to Hell. Again, ripping this thing to pieces. Obviously, this guy cannot be pleased, and obviously he doesn't get what we're trying to do. And he says, the original uncut movie would get 5 stars, and this RCS, Retro Seduction Cinema Abomination, gets 0. Well, guess what? You're a 0. You go on down the line to put over Exploitation Cinema Mausoleum Blood Song, which the Mausoleum print was the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. In fact, my VHS still looks better for it. Out of 4 films, he only liked one, and it wasn't really a good film. And then, like I said, you know, the one he nails on me, never judge a book by its cover. Let me tell you something, whoever you are, and you're obviously using, you know, a fake name, and I even went in with my real name and tried to have a thing where I got rebutted and all this other stuff. Obviously, Amazon doesn't want any crap on their site, and it is really nice that Amazon makes this feature available where you can review things, but like I say, sleazy I'll take. Creepy and old, I'm not creepy and I'm not that old. I may look bad on the DVD, but I think this is when I just came back from cancer surgery, so something, fuck you, okay? So, this is my beef. I've never told anybody not to buy anything based on a recommendation. I've never trashed anybody's product in print. And this guy obviously seems that, you know, to get a Woody over doing this. Well, Bay Area Savage or whatever your name is, you're on the shit list for this week. Not only because you trashed me, but you're just trashing the company I deal with and you're trashing other companies that I'm friendly with. Dude, if you don't like this stuff, do us all a favor. Don't buy it and don't write about it because you trashing me drove up sales. You don't seem to understand that. And that's another reason why there's a lot of people out there that I basically have no love lost for, but I'm not going to trash them because in trashing them, that's making people aware of their existence and might make them curious to seek out their stuff. So why would I want to do that? So in closing, you trashed me. You boosted my sales, and I thank you for that, but you know something? You're on the shit list because you belong there because you're an asshole and you don't know what you're talking about. So that's that. So that's our shit list for this week. I saw this, and like I said, I got pretty thick skin, but attacking me personally and telling people not to buy my products, that's fucking bullshit. You don't like it? Okay, fine. You don't like it. I'm not going to please everybody, but that title is selling very well, thank you. So, you know, your little emotional outburst and calling me this and calling me that. Hey, you know something? Fuck you. You don't know the business. You don't want to learn the business. I try to tell people reasons things are done so I don't have to deal, you know. Like I said, going back to the soundtracks, we got to change a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to be released that has to be changed because, you know, we don't want to get a legal knock. And you guys don't want us to get a legal knock because we're never going to be able to release anything again. You know, because once you get hit by one of the big, you know, biggies, they're going to bury you. So, yeah, we're very meticulous, and we make sure that, you know, we're 100% legally in the right before we release anything. And if we have to take some stuff out, I apologize, but it has to be done. You know, there's no other way around it. They're not going to license us the rights to use this music, mainstream music, on a porn film, and that's the bottom line. So that's where that's at.
Well, plus, you know, even a movie like Centipede Horror, great Asian movie that cannot be released in America because the soundtrack is Elm Street music.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, back in the day you'd get away with this because these were, you know, one-shot deals, shot here, shot there, and yeah, I have something coming out that's going to be 4 hardcore features on one DVD, and I'm sure he'll trash that too. But you know something? Do us a favor. Don't buy it. We don't care. I personally don't need your money and have no use for you. That's just what it comes down to. I mean, I can take constructive criticism. I can't take personal attacks, especially in public. You just attack me in public, so guess what? Fuck you. You're on the shit list. So, hey, you know, I tell it like it is, Todd. I don't give a shit, you know?
I know.
I try to do the best I can with what I have. I try to put out the best presentation possible, and if, you know, somebody don't like it, fine. You know, if that's what got your rocks off, fine. You achieved, you know, you're obviously out to piss me off, and you did, because it was a personal attack, you know? I don't go on personal attacks in print.
That's terrible.
I have gone on personal attacks, and I pay for them, you know, and I don't do it anymore. I mean, if somebody's wrong, I'll say they're wrong, you know, and if I truly believe they're wrong, you know, I'll emote on it. But I think that was complete bullshit what the guy did. And, you know, he went in, not only went after me, went after Retro Seduction Cinema, went after Snaps with their trailer comps, but puts over a piece of shit. So I don't get it. I honestly don't. But, okay, whatever you are, Bay Area Savage, shit list is yours for the third week. And, you know, something, being that... That thing, the giveaway went over so well last week. I think we're going to do another one. What do you think? Should we do another one?
Sounds good to me.
All right. You're going to have to guess the title of this one. This DVD is out of print, and if you go on Amazon or eBay, you'll probably see it going for a couple $1,000s or more here, right? You know, that's what kills me. Everything's marked up to the max on these sites, and nobody's buying it. But anyway, this was probably one of the last films produced by the Hammer people. One of the last Hammer films produced, has Christopher Lee in it, has Richard Widmark, and if you can give me the title of this film, you got it. First one who gives me the title, 40deuce@hotmail.com, 40deuce spelled out. First one who sends me the title of this film, you got one coming in the mail, probably Monday. So that's going to be our little giveaway of the week this week. That little disc, again, it's a Hammer film. It stars Christopher Lee and Richard Widmark, and it's out of print. It was probably one of the last things that Hammer made. Now, I did allude to the fact that I was going to bring someone on this week, a special guest. And this young lady has been all over the map lately. I actually met her back when I was first doing Nick Phillips films. I was doing Lustful Addiction. She starred in the remake of Lustful Addiction. And she's also been in Lord of the G-Strings, Spider Babe, Skin Crawl, The Devil's Bloody Playthings, Flesh for the Beast, which harkens back to the Grindhouse days, a mainstream film based on Jack Ketchum's book, The Lost. She was in that. She was also in the film where I got the shit knocked out of me by Darian Kane with a snow shovel, Bat Babe the Dark Nighty. She has formed a company with a bunch of other filmmakers called Chainsaw Kiss. That distinguished company includes Bill Hellfire, Victor Bonacore, Joey Smack, Screamer Claws, and a couple other people. I call what they do guerrilla filmmaking because they ran an event over at the film archives over in the East Village, and they packed the place standing room only on a Saturday night. I'd like to welcome a good little friend of mine, Ruby LaRocca, to the show. So how are you doing?
I'm good. There's a full moon. I'm watching the clouds, like, slowly pass the moon.
It's nice and spooky out there.
It is. Yeah. I'm part werewolf, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, so am I.
Excites me.
That's why I'm, like, locked up in this room now. So I can't do any damage to others or myself. Mainly myself. That's what it usually winds up. So I was actually going on, you know, I basically said, you know, I put over everything you were in. Like, I remember I first met you back when the Nick Phillips stuff started, when you did Lustful Addiction.
That's one of my favorite movies to come in, actually.
Yeah, that was, like, one of the most drug-fueled movies I ever saw. In fact, I wrote the review for both of them, and I got called up on the one I wrote for years. I'm like, we can't print this. Are you out of your mind? It was a Nick Phillips thing. It was black. It was black and white.
Remake.
Well, you can tell them. You were Misty Monday. Remade the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. That was her directorial debut. It was kind of funny because we were like, let's make a lesbian sex scene, or as we think that lesbians would really have sex, which is not like the other movies, where it's just like, you know, all of a sudden you're like orgasming. So we were like, you know, let's make it really, really drawn out, because that's how we think that lesbians would have sex work. Like, you know, it takes a long time. You could seduce each other for a really long time. So I think like before it was edited, that there's like one sex scene that we shot in that, but before it was edited, was like 36 minutes of us just like taunting each other and almost pleasuring each other. But the guy, the DP, was like, that was intense, you know, afterwards. He was like, that was really intense. Because he just kept going and going and going. But that was all based on a real, you know, not a real, but, you know, Nick Phillips movie.
Yeah, Nick's pretty cool. He does some cool stuff. Then you did a bunch of other stuff, Lord of the G-Strings. I guess these are all the takeoffs. You did, like, Spider Babe, stuff like that. But then I saw you in that, this was a pretty heavy-duty thing, that Jack Ketchum of The Lost.
Yeah, no, that was really fun. That was fun. I mean, it's a really, I don't know if anyone's, like, read his book, that Jack Ketchum is a very serious, like, horror writer or dramatic writer. And I actually didn't know before I did that movie, and I started reading his books after I did that movie. And I've read The Lost, and I've read, you know, The Girl Next Door, which has also been turned into two movies.
Did you read Off Season?
No.
Off Season is the one that, like, from what I understand, I haven't talked to, I met Jack quite a few times over the years at, like, the conventions and stuff, and from what he had told me, that book was toned down.
He's a brutal writer, you know, like, he...
The only way I can describe this book is, like, The Hills Have Eyes on crack. Yeah, it's definitely worth picking.
He's
even
such a nice guy, like, so nice, like, he's so, so nice. The Lost was, like, it was amazing, you know, me and, like, Misty got flown out to California, and we shot up in the hills in Malibu, which was incredible. Like, I swear that, like, we were so high up in the mountains that the stars looked bigger. Like, it was, we were in complete blackness, but, like, the stars, just, we were closer to the stars, I suppose, so it just looked bigger, and we were shooting at this, like, weird sex camps, and like, there was, like, there was a mold, I have a picture, there was a mold of the woman who owned it, there was a mold of her vagina, like, hanging on the wall, and it was, like, really, she wasn't young or attractive in any sense, and neither was her vagina, so it was, like, this horrible, like, flappy mess that was molded and cast and hanging on the wall.
What's the name of the camp? Camp Lickaway?
Pete, that's like your ultimate camp right there, man. You'd be there every day.
That's why I'm, like, locked up in this room now.
I say this out of personal experience, because my parents are nudists, and they belong to a nudist colony, and I've seen the pictures. It's horrifying. It's like everyone you would never want to see naked. You know, I'm like, my mom tells me these stories, like, you know, oh, I was playing volleyball this weekend and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I'll forget that she's naked while, you know, like, while this is going on, like, because she'll be halfway through the story and then it will hit my brain. I'm like, wait, her and everyone in this story is naked. That's fucking weird. Like, and they're not, like, attractive naked people. They're, like, old, fat naked people.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, if you could get a hold of a nudist camp magazine, you were the man. That was hot stuff. And, but you were right, they were just ugly, fat, horrible people, but hey, it was better than nothing.
I guess. I don't know. People are like, are your parents swingers? I'm like, I don't know, and I don't want to know.
That's why I'm, like, locked up in this room now. Don't mind me.
I've seen pictures of my parents naked. That's enough for me. That's, like, way too much for me. So, that's the thing, you know, it's like, you know, getting naked in movies, like, I have no problem with nudity in movies or getting naked myself, but now I'm getting older and I'm like, oh my God, you want me to take my shirt off, are you sure? Like, I'm not as skinny as I used to be.
There's nothing wrong with the way you look. You know, your whole filmography speaks, you know, that you're still going, you know, and you keep on making things, you know, like you did that Grindhouse thing, Flesh for the Beast and stuff like that, you know? And you've also produced stuff, and you worked at art direction. I don't see you slowing down any time soon.
No, no, no. Hopefully it's just picking up.
Yeah. Plus, now, I had touched on this, I don't know, was it last week, Todd? It might have been, that you put together this crew, which consists of yourself, Victor Bonacor, Joey Smack, sometimes Phil Hellfire, Brandon, Screamer Claws, and you put on this event, A Night of Dangerous Cinema, and you also have Linnea Quigley backing you up, too, and you ran this thing at the film archives over in the Village, and pretty much you got standing room only, which is amazing, considered how jaded people are, how they don't want to come out and do shit, you know? You know, down to Double Down and all that stuff. You know, that was some good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was amazing. That was, like, the best night of my life, you know? It really was, because I've never, like, it was my first time writing and directing my own movie, and that played, and people seemed to really like it. Actually, Linnea said that was her favorite movie to play that night, and she was like, how did you come up with that? She was asking me all these questions and stuff. That was amazing. You know, she's like, she's my scream queen, ultimate scream queen hero, you know? Like, I just want to be like her one day. And for her to like my movie, my little movie, was just life-affirming for me. And yeah, we had it free because we rented the space, and I was just like, we should have it free because we already paid for it. Why charge people to get in, like, we just want to pack the place. We just want people to see what we're doing. Because we're working so hard. Like, we really have been working so hard the last year. And shooting stuff in film when we can afford it. We have a 16mm camera. And, you know, like I said, when we can afford it, we shoot on film. That doesn't always happen. We do, like, I shot my movie on digital because, you know, that's what I had to do. But also, I didn't want to, like, waste film, and I've never directed anything, but I just we wanted people to see what we've been doing, whether they like it or they hate it or whatever they feel about it, you know, all that stuff is fine. John Waters is one of my heroes, and he used to, when people would put, like, you know, when he put out movies and people would review them and have bad reviews, he used to put those on the box covers. Like, you know, what if a bad review he got? He would put that right on the box cover, and I love that. I love that about him, and I love that, you know, about all cinema. It's like, it's not about pleasing anyone, you know? It's about doing what you want to do, and whatever you want to say, whatever you want to portray, is just being true to yourself.
No, you're absolutely right. The funny thing is, Todd and I, we just went over that because somebody got on the shit list this week that basically trashed me personally on Amazon for this DVD. And I said, you know, basically, sometimes, like you say, a bad review was good because the last guy who did that jacked my sales up. That whole night was, like, very surreal because, like I said, you know, not too many people come out. You pack the place, standing room only. And the films, everybody reacted to everything that was up there, and it was just such a mixed bag of, like, performance art, anime, social commentary, and, you know, I'm like one of those guys, I gotta watch it, go home and digest it. I'm like, holy shit, you know, there's some really wild stuff here, and, like, really, you're not afraid to put your thoughts and feelings out on film and out in the public where it should be, you know, and you're bringing a lot of things to light that, you know, I don't think any other filmmaker would have the balls to do, you know, after seeing some of this.
I feel extremely fortunate for not only knowing the people that I know, but, like, being friends with the people that I know, as far as not just filmmakers, but musicians, you know, painters, all these people that I feel are extremely talented. And we try to, like, you know, not like we're taking advantage of them, but, you know, as far as, like, movies go, it's like, if we can put somebody's music in our movies, we do it because we actually really love their music. And it was really funny because my friend Mike Hunchback, who performed that night, fell off the stage. And I used his music multiple times in my movie. And the next time I saw him play, he played in Brooklyn, and I went to the show, and he like announced to the crowd that I was there, and he said like, you know, the best moment of my life. He was like, I fucking played it in Anthology Film Archives, and he was like naming all these movies that he's seen there, you know, he said that was like the, you know, crowning achievement of his life, you know, and that was amazing to me because, like, he's just my friend and I really like his music and I wanted to put his music in my movie because it means something to me. Not just because he's my friend. It means something to me, you know? And
to
hear him say, like, that was such an amazing experience for him. It's just nice, you know? It's like when you put your emotions out there and it's reciprocated.
Yeah, you don't get much of that in this business today, you know. It's rare to find people that are tight and work together, you know, instead of, like, tearing each other apart and stuff.
Absolutely.
And you do have this out on a DVD, right?
Yes.
The Underground Shorts of Ruby LaRocca.
Yes.
Okay, now where would they... You're not going to get it in Best Buy's, I know that. The same with my stuff.
No.
Same problem. Who knows?
I don't want to anyway. Yeah. That's not important to me, but I actually have a website is being built to me right now, rubylarocca.net. It's going to be really cool when it's finished.
Ruby, what would your dream project be as a filmmaker?
What's that?
What would your dream project be as a filmmaker?
My dream project? Wow, my dream project. Well, it's hard for me to, like, say exactly what my dream project would be because I'm already writing something. And I'm like, can I really make this? I don't know. I guess my dream project would be, like, I would like to evolve, like, Michelle or people are like Michel Gondry, Michael Gondry, like he like started making like music videos and they were all based on dreams that he had and then he went on to direct like a lot of major movies. He did like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, yeah.
Yeah, he directed that. I would just like to evolve, you know? Like, I don't want to ever stand still. I don't want to ever, like, do something that I already did. Like, I already hate the movie that I made. The first movie I made, I was like, I don't ever want to watch it again. I don't ever want to watch it again. I don't like it.
Like, which one was that?
Not that, Belated by Valentine's Lover. My first.
You were working under a few different names too, weren't you?
What?
Were you working under different names at one point too?
Oh no! I mean, like, there's like the first like two or three movies I did was under Esmeralda de la Roca, but.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, but you know, in 10 years you'll look back on those, and right now you'll hate them, and then you'll look back and you'll go, you know what though? Everyone had to start somewhere. I mean, that's the key. And
yeah. And
you'll see things in there that you'll kind of like. Because, like, some of my early movies I hate. But when I look back at them now, I still kind of hate them. But there's parts of them that I go, wow, how did I pull that off?
No, absolutely. I mean, like, it's weird because, like, and, like, I'm not trying to sound pretentious at all. But, like, when people, like, ask me, like, you know, about my life, the only thing I've ever known about myself is that I'm a writer. Like, I started writing when I was 7 years old, like, in first grade. I remember writing poetry, first grade, and, like, I used to take the back of my mom's. My mom used to get, like cards, you know, for different occasions, like Christmas or Thanksgiving or Valentine's Day or whatever. And I would rip off the back half of the card where there was, like, some, you know, like, whatever, message or thing or whatever, and I'd rip it off, and then I would look at the front of the card, whatever the picture was, and I would write poetry about whatever the picture was, So it was the only thing like I ever knew. I was like, I know how to write. I know how to write. But then you grow up and you start learning how you're supposed to write. And that was like a huge downfall in my writing. And it sucks because you never comprehend and you never appreciate anything you do until after the fact. And, like, so I never thought I was a good writer. I never thought that I had any fucking talent or anything until after, years later, years and years and years, and I go back and I read that shit, and I'm like, wow, all my best writing I did, I was, like, in high school or just beyond high school because I didn't know anything about writing. It was honest and it was pure. Now when you fucking try to write and you know about writing, it's just tainted. Like, oh, I need, you know, there needs to be structure, there needs to be this and that, whatever. It's just bullshit.
I still haven't done that. It's funny. I still have the same style because I never aspire. Actually, I was right when I was in college, but then I all went down the wayside. But when I got approached to start doing stuff, I didn't even know how to type. I was writing stuff longhand. So my style never changed. I mean, I can alter it and be nice and polite and stuff like that, but people just don't like that for me, so I sort of keep it that way. But I know what you're saying. You look back on stuff that, you know, you think, you know, didn't mean anything, you're like, wow, that was
You always think what you're doing is shit, and then you look back at it, and you're like, no, this is actually pretty awesome.
Chainsaw Kiss is a cool name for a company, and I'm thinking, man, we got to see some cool horror product coming out of this group.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll have
but
to send you the DVD.
But we're not really doing exactly horror stuff. We're doing all different stuff.
It's a whole different concept, Todd, because I didn't know what to expect when I went down. Because I see Chainsaw and Kiss, I naturally assume somebody's going to kiss a chainsaw during the course of the evening, you know. But, no, this is all different. Like I say, it's this eclectic mix, for lack of better words, of like performance art, anime, social commentary. And some of it gets really down and gritty, and you're sitting there going, fuck, I never looked at it like that. So,
no, that's what we want to do, though. That don't want to make, like, we're making movies, but we don't want to make anything that's like anything else we made. And we want to make cartoons, and we want to make comic books, and we just want to do everything, you know. Actually, our next show is just going to be entirely music. Like, our next show we put on is going to be all music, all, you know, people that we have used their music in our movies or whatever. Just our friends, music that inspire us, and so our next show is going to be entirely music.
Were you going to have that archived again?
Not at Anthology, actually at probably Bowery Poetry Club, I think it's called.
I'm not familiar with that.
But it's on the Lower East Side. But you know, we just want to, like, you know, every medium that there is, we want to infiltrate. Every medium.
Right. So Chainsaw Kiss is basically a multimedia organization.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Whether or not people actually pay attention to us is a different story, but...
Well, you know, the whole name grabs you first because, you know, it has the whole inference of sex and violence right off the bat. So, you know, people would think that. Then you have Brandon's Eye. I mean, what more could one want? You know.
Our thing is, we want to put the love back in death. Put the love back in death.
We can always have you back on. That's definitely doable. I mean, you're only 20 minutes away anyhow, so, you know, for me anyhow.
Well, the main thing is we get to know Ruby. I mean, we're getting to know you, so that's the important thing, is this is you, and that's what we want. We don't necessarily, you don't have to come on here and do a song and dance. We just like the fact that you're being yourself.
Thank you.
That's what the show's all about, you know, it's, you know, being yourself, Grindhouse, whatever. And actually, Ruby and I have been kicking something around that may come to fruition pretty soon. It's not something that nobody's ever done, but nobody's ever done it with the material we intend on using. So, you know, I'm not going to expose too much of that because somebody will jump on it and steal it and shit, because they always do. But, yeah, this is going to be interesting when we get it done, believe me. Could be the feel-good DVD of the year whenever it comes out. Considering the infrequency of everything we've released lately, you know, through pop or whatever. Everybody's having trouble, though. That's the whole problem, you know. Anyway, it was great having you on, and, you know, we'll do it again, and, you know, we'll make you a regular.
Anytime, dude. Anytime. Oh. I had a blast.
Oh, cool. All right, yeah, definitely. And we'll be in touch. Thanks again for being on. Well, that was really great having her on. You know, she's a live wire. I mean, you know, Ruby goes out and she promotes. She does stuff. She's never not working. I mean, she works a full-time gig on top of, you know, doing the acting and running, you know, starting this company and stuff like that. And, you know, it's all cool stuff. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we're going to work together again down the road. We got a couple projects, you know, we're kicking around and stuff like that. So, you know, they only live like, you know, the weird part is, I didn't even notice, they only live like 20 minutes from where I am or 10 minutes even if there's no traffic and stuff. So it's cool. But I guess we got to pitch some of the people that are carrying my stuff. Jim's House of Video on Washington Avenue in Belleville, just in there the other day, and he's got more stuff. I mean, they've expanded the adult section, so it's outrageous. And I mean, you can buy adult DVDs in Jim's House of Video from anywhere from $3.99 to $29.99. There's DVDs for every price range. You don't have to worry about that. If you walk in there, I guarantee you're going to walk out with something, whether it be porn, horror, you know, whatever, a CD. You're going to walk out with something. And let us not forget Rare Flicks down in the Meadowlands Parkway in beautiful Sea Caucus. They're at the end of the parkway. You got to go and make a U-turn, but they have a huge store filled with all my stuff. They actually have the entire Pop Cinema line in there. They have the Synapse line. They have the Media Blasters line. They have anime. They have action figures. They got some out-of-print stuff. It's just a cool store. You can go in there, hang out. The guys are running it cool, and it's just a big, great, big toy store for guys like us. And then Planet DVD down on River Street in Hackensack, they carry all my stuff, and they have a huge adult section, too. So there's three choices if you just don't want to order the stuff online and you want to wander off and things like that, and you just want to browse. There's tons of shit to browse through in all three of these stores, so you can kill a couple hours, which is like we used to do back in the days with liquidators and stuff like that, bins. You don't want to go through bins and move boxes to find treasures and stuff. It's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, that's cool stuff, too. And, you know, we're not going to have a sordid story of the week this week. I'm holding this off until next week because I might bring someone on. I might bring on Amrith from deadandundead.com because she's gearing up for this big show in the middle of August. And I might give her a few minutes to describe and put over what she's doing because I can only do justice to so much. I mean, she could describe the stuff in better detail. As a matter of fact, I saw the 42nd Street Pete stash box yesterday. It's a glow-in-the-dark stash box. It's something, you know, if I wasn't 42nd Street Pete, I'd want one, but I got enough 42nd Street Pete, you know, memorabilia laying around here. But, yeah, it's going to be cool, and she's working on a bunch of stuff. So, you know, if we can get her on next week, we're going to get her on. We're going to try to have little surprises here and there. People have been contacting me about, you know, coming on and, you know, talking to the fans and stuff like that. And, you know, being this is an uncensored venue, why not? You know, let some of the people say what's on their minds. You know, you can vent freely here. Fuck, I do it, you know. So, you know, hopefully we're going to have that, you know, coming down the road. Because, like I said, a few people have contacted me, and I'm putting it out there. If anybody, you know, wants to come on and talk, put over their products, whatever, put over their films, fine. We'd love to have you on. We'd just love it, you know. It just adds, you know, to the ambiance. Plus, I can only be entertaining for so long before I'm going to get fucking boring. You're going to get sick of the stories and stuff. But then, you know, maybe not, because Todd seems to think, you know, I got a lot to say, so I can always, you know, come up with a lot more. So,
Pete, look how many years I've known you. I have known you many years now. I was looking back at our early shows together, and in all these years I've known you, I'm not bored yet, and you're always surprising me with some of these stories.
Okay, well, you know, we can keep it up. You know, I'm like I said, I've never been that overly impressed with myself, so, you know, I'm you know, pretty humble about that. You know, what the hell? I'm out here to have a good time. You know, we don't make a hell of a lot of money doing what we do. And, you know, somebody said the other day, you know, if you really put your head together, you know, you can go work for somebody. And I'm like, why would I want to do that nonsense? You know, granted, I don't make a lot of money doing this and I sell on eBay and stuff like that, but I don't got to put up with a lot of shit either. And why would I want to be stuck in a situation where I got to be somewhere 9 to 5? I've been there, took that, don't want to do it anymore. So, yeah, I don't make a lot of money, and I live like probably a little bit above the poverty level, but you know something? I don't got to put up with that much shit. So I'm happy with it, you know? I can always come out and live with you. You know, what the hell?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you probably got an abandoned car on your front lawn you haven't turned in for the clunkers for cash thing, you know?
We got a room we could stick you in.
Yeah, what the hell? Yeah, go out there and buy a house. What the heck?
Sounds awesome. Sounds awesome.
Anything's possible in this world. anything's possible. I mean, who would have thought that the government would back a program where they're giving you $4,500 for basically a piece of shit that's worth about $500? Who would have thought? Only in America. And the people in Kentucky and West Virginia can finally see their front yards now. So it's a beautiful thing. So I guess that's about it for this week. We're going to wrap this up, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more insanity on tap for next week. So until then, you guys stay sick, and thanks for tuning in. Later.
Forty Second Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.